I would like to remind you that for more Microsoft webcasts, you can go to microsoft.com/webcasts. Thanks again for joining us for today's MSD and GeekSpeak webcast, SQL Data Services with Javis Johnson. Now it is my pleasure to introduce today's first presenter, Lynn Langan. Lynn, you now have the floor.
Thank you very much. Well, hello and welcome to this week's MSD and GeekSpeak. We're continuing our monthly series on all things Windows Azure, and today I have the pleasure of working with someone who I haven't worked with before. This is a developer evangelist from the East Coast, Danny Diaz. So, Danny, can you go ahead and put the slide to the next slide? There we go. And there's what Danny looks like, and you all know me. And as we get started here, we're just going to talk a little bit about what's going on in our specific areas. So in my area, I've got Silverlight proctored hands-on labs coming up throughout Southern California. It's something that we're trying, a new type of event. We're calling MSDN Unleashed, and we're really, really excited because we're offering it four times, and we got labs from the product group. So in addition to that, we've got sunny skies and 80 degrees, which I just have to rub in because I hear Danny's from the east. So Danny, tell us a little bit about your world. What's going on out there?
So getting ready for the MSDN Developer Conference here in Reston, Virginia, coming up on Friday. But other than that, I'm enjoying some very nice weather here. It's about 9 degrees, counting the windshield. But we're getting ready to also do some events on Silverlight coming up in the next couple months here in Philly. So really looking forward to that, doing some Silverlight and also some Azure stuff, data services, and all the great things that that we have coming up, all these great technologies that we have coming up, we'll be doing some events around those. So looking forward to the next 6 months.
Great. Well, terrific. Well, it's really fun to be working with you on GeekSpeak. We haven't met in person, but it's you know, a lot of people are working virtually, and so here we go.
Yeah, yeah.
So today, our guest is a friend of mine, hails from Southern California, James Johnson. He is one of our strong community leads and a working developer with the Azure technology. So, James, if you want to say hello and tell the audience a little bit about yourself and your background.
Hello, everybody. My name's James, and I'm the founder and president of the Inland Empire .NET Users Group in Riverside, California. I've been developing since LaserDisc days, and I get a big kick out of it. And I especially love doing the data stuff. And then when the cloud programming came out, I just jumped on the bandwagon.
Well, we have a kind of a little interesting story about how we got James to PDC. PDC, for those of you who don't know, is Professional Developers Conference, held only very infrequently in Los Angeles. And because of all the great community work that James does with his user group and other user groups and Microsoft events, I really wanted to get him a pass to PDC and had a really, really difficult time because they're very, very controlled. So this is a true story. I found on Facebook a Microsoft developer evangelist from Iceland. Was unable to go because of the economic crisis and said, I have an extra pass to PDC. So I jumped on it, and James was able to go to PDC due to the graciousness of, what is his name again? I don't think I can pronounce it.
Gisli.
Gisli, yeah, Gisli from Iceland. So in any case, James was at PDC, and he got introduced to the Azure technologies and got really, really excited in the area of data access and was one of the early adopters. The SQL Data Services technology is very, very early in its beta release. And James and I and Danny were talking before the show about how we're all three working on learning it. And we're sure that those of you listening are working as well. For those of you that aren't familiar with the GeekSpeak format, we are not a slide webcast presentation. This presentation is driven by your questions. So as we're going along, James has some things to show you and to share about what he's learned working with SQL Data Services, but we'll be very interested in answering any question that you might have. You notice there that James and I are actually at an event together. We were at, where was that, James?
That's the BizSpark.
Oh, that's right, yeah, BizSpark. BizSpark is a new initiative that we have around startups, and you just go to Microsoft.com BizSpark, and we were at a swanky party up in LA. That was a lot of fun, so I thought that was a fun picture. Danny, did you have a BizSpark launch event out in your area?
There was one in New York City, but we didn't have one here in Philly. We actually tried to, but it was a little too late.
Ah, okay.
We do have some nice startups that are using BizSpark, so excited about that.
Yeah, it's a cool program. Just got announced in November, and it's basically our software for free for 3 years to startups that meet certain conditions. And if you just go to the Microsoft.com BizSpark site, it talks about it. James, aren't you a network partner for that as well?
Yeah, I'm a network partner, and if you go to the user group site, then there's a link there that you can sign up.
Oh, awesome. Well, anyway, although we could talk about that the whole time, we are here to talk about SQL Data Services as part of Windows Azure Services. And before we start showing you the nitty-gritty, we probably should define what it is we're talking about. So James, you give information out to lots of developers at your user group and lots of different events. How are you explaining this to developers that are coming to your user group and saying, hey, what is this Azure stuff? What is SQL Data Services? And what's sort of the nutshell explanation of it?
SQL Data Services is a bit different than Azure. It's part of it, but SQL Data Services is different from the Azure table storage. So I try to explain that to them, but pretty much just say, put your application in the cloud and let Microsoft worry about the hardware, the staffing, you know, if it's going to be up or down, you know, what happens if something fails, and it frees you up to do what you want to do. Really cool.
Well, I think one thing we need to get right out before we get into the demos, because I'm sure Danny gets this question too. Now, is SQL Data Services just SQL Server in the cloud?
No, not at the moment, and I don't think that it will be. I mean, this is still CTP. They're still talking about what you'll be able to do. Eventually, I'm good friends with one of the senior program managers on the SQL Data Services team, and we talk a lot. And you know, they will eventually have reporting and analysis and all that kind of stuff. But it's not SQL Server in the cloud. It's a data service, and it uses REST or SOAP to communicate.
So I guess the good way to put it is it's not SQL hosted. It hosts a SQL Server.
Correct.
So,
yeah, it is not.
So then the obvious question is, well, why would I use it? Why do I care about it as a developer?
Oh, and this is what's really cool. This is what really turned me on about it, is that it uses the data centers and is geolocated. So if you're building your application and you know that you're going to be getting more traffic from Europe than you are from Southern California, you can geolocate your data to where it's closer to your customers.
That is a good reason. Anything else?
Another thing is that it's the failover. Everything is mirrored, so that if one server goes down, it automatically flips over to another server that's hosting the data services. In fact, at PDC, they were talking about it at these data centers that run these things, the people only work there from 9 to 5. Now, I find that a little hard to believe, but that's what they were saying, and so that if a machine goes down, they don't have to rush in and fix it, or they can just replace it the next day or when they get around to it.
Wow.
pretty cool.
Yeah, that is. Well, I think we need to see this. So you have some things prepared for us if you want to share out your desktop. One of the first things that you were going to show us is how to get started, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so do you want to go ahead and share your desktop and show us a little bit about that?
No, yeah. I'm just trying to remember how to do it here. Okay. Okay, so can everybody see that?
Yeah, it looks great.
Yep.
Okay, so let me bring this over. The first thing you want to do is actually you want to go to, and I always remember this because I can never remember all the whack-whacks after Microsoft.com. If you just go to Azure.com. And this is the main portal for everything Azure. If you click on the services and then the SQL services, there's everything you need there. So in order to start developing with it, you have to sign up for the public CTP. And you need to have a live ID to do that. And so you can see here, you come to this Microsoft SQL Services page, and you can sign up here for free. and you click select, and you go through the process. One of the things that's interesting, and I tell people that are doing this, you see where I highlighted, it doesn't cost you anything, but in order for them to validate that you really are who you are, you have to put in a valid credit card. They don't charge it, but it's just how they say you are who you are.
And I'm just going to make a little point in there. I actually blogged about this on my blog, SoCal Dev Gal, but I spun quite a few cycles on this, and I just want to share so other people don't have to. Because of this credit card validation, and because eventually this will be a pay service, we've got strong validation in here. And if you are putting in a credit card and you know the credit card is good, and the best thing to do is to actually check with your credit card company, but the validation is coming back failing, then what you need to do is go to this website, billing.microsoft.com, and then you need to fill in any blank fields. I had an Xbox account that had TBD for my name and a couple other accounts because it validates against that. So it's just a tip. I have it on my blog. I wrote it all down. If the validation is failing and you know that your card is good, then you can just make that correction and then you can get your token. Now, once you get it, do you get it right away, James, or do you have to wait? I can't remember.
That process there that I just showed you, it happens right away.
Okay.
It's the Azure, the other Azure services that you have to go through Connect and all that, and it takes a little bit of time.
Okay, that's right. So
a couple of days.
Yeah, a couple of days. So when you complete that token request process, what is the final screen? What's the final result? Do you get the actual token? I think you do, don't you?
No, actually, you don't.
They email it to you? Is that how it works?
Yeah. No, okay. What you do is you end up with a screen that looks like this, which was kind of confusing for me. It took a while. I expected to have all this information.
That's right.
But all I see here is the name of the solution that I created, and then the opportunity to change my password.
That's correct. And I was confused by that, too, so thanks for showing that. So, okay, great. So then you get that screen, and then what's the next step?
Well, then the next step is, well, one thing to remember is you have to sign in with a live ID to get to this, but the name of your solution when you're developing, your username is this name here. So, for instance, I've created a solution called Anonymous Types, and then the password here that you set up. It's not your live ID, username and password. It's
that's
you want to use.
Point. Yeah.
So then after that, the next thing is to go to the Azure and get the training kit. And this is a whole bunch of labs and hands-on labs and demos and samples and everything that was available at PDC and has a lot of really great information that you can use for that you'll want to use when you're getting used to this, when you're getting started.
Yeah, now one difference in the data access methods, if I understand correctly, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, is for Azure Table Storage, you can only access it via REST. But for SQL services, you can access it via REST or SOAP. That's my understanding. So
that's correct. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you know, one of the decision points is if you need SOAP, then you're going to have to use SQL services. I mean, there are other reasons, as James said, the geolocating and the replication and that kind of stuff. But I thought that was a point worth mentioning once I figured that out. Okay. So once you've got the training kit, then where do you go from there, James?
Well, another link that we have then is the the SQL Data Services portal, which has all the other information that you're going to need. There's the developer. This is the developer center. Excuse me. There's a really great primer here on what to do, and actually this has a lot of the same material. I think it's been updated in the last month or so since PDC, but it has a lot of the same hands-on labs and things that are in that training kit that I just talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, one quick side note about the training kit. If you installed that a couple weeks ago and didn't see anything on the demos or presentations, go back there now, and we should have updated that site, because I know originally when I installed it, there was really nothing coming down.
Mm-hmm.
And last time I went to visit it, it was full of goodies. So just in case you did it a couple weeks ago, you might have not gotten much out of it.
Okay. That's good to know. Also, one thing is, and kind of threw me for a loop when I first started, is that it wasn't referencing the AJAX toolkit DLL properly. So I had to go there and fix that. Hopefully they fix that now.
Oh, that's good information. Thanks for sharing. Okay, good. So you get all your prerequisites, and then you're ready to go.
Right, so, and then one other thing I just want to show is the forum.
Okay.
There's really active forums for SQL Data Services, and I'm sure you'll be providing links to all these when we're done.
Yeah, you know, post-show, for those of you who haven't listened to a GeekSpeak, we actually have a blog just for GeekSpeak on MSDN, and we post all the links post-show. So all these links James is showing, we'll get them up there, so you don't have to worry about trying to get them from the webcast.
Right. And one other thing that I've noticed, and between working with Azure and working with SQL Data Services, is that you can develop with SQL Data Services on XP, Windows XP. For Azure, you need to have Vista.
Yep, good point.
So, okay, so that's how you get set up, that's how you get started.
Great, so now you've got your user account and you've got your password. So now from a developer standpoint, are you going to show us from a code sample how you make the connection and then, you know, store data up in the cloud?
Well, before we do that, I want to talk a little bit about the structure, how the data is structured.
Okay.
How it works up there. And it uses what's called an ACE model, authorities, containers, and entities.
Okay, and that's your blog you're showing there.
Yeah. I've been blogging pretty regularly on it, although I've been getting ready for this and haven't blogged too much.
So James's blog, for those of you listening to a podcast, is www.duringlunch.com.
I only work on it at lunchtime, so that's why it doesn't matter. Okay, so anyway, to go into what the ACE model is, so we talked about how SQL Data Services is geolocated. And so the authority is what you set up to say, I want this data to be in Los Angeles, or I want it to be in Houston, or I want it to be in Prague. Underneath the authority are your containers. And so a container can only be in one authority. It can't be in multiple authorities. Does that make sense?
So is a container like a table, or is a container like a database?
A container is like a database.
Okay.
Kinda.
Okay. Kinda, okay.
And the entity, then, is like the data that's in your table.
Okay.
Okay. And there's a bit of a shift here in dealing. You know, you're writing you're in SQL Management Studio and you're creating a database, and you have your table and you set up your columns, you know, your ID field and this field and that field and everything, and that's how your data is supposed to fit into that database. Well, with the ACE model, with the entity, it stores any number of user defined properties with those values. So every time you make a commit, it doesn't even have to be the same structure as what you did before. It's just there.
So the way I've heard it described, and I would wonder if you think this is accurate, is a schema-less table.
Mm-hmm.
So more like a property bag?
Correct. Like a property bag.
Yeah. Okay. So what kind of restrictions are on these three components, on authorities, containers, and entities? You know, can you, like, are there quotas? What about data types? What about constraints? How is it like a database? How is it not like a database?
That's a good question. Well, I mean, if we go down here a little bit more, I mean, it talks about homogeneous and heterogeneous.
Uh-huh.
So you would think of it, you know, like a table in a database is homogeneous because all the data in that table has to be of the same type.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your IDs have to be ints or GUIDs and, you know, varchars and all that kind of stuff. So if you read down a little bit further, so a books container has books in it. But a heterogeneous container has anything in it. It's like storing an entire database in a table. So you could have a book, you could have books and office supplies and furniture and employees. So it just depends on what you're more comfortable with working in and what your application needs.
So I have a question about the authority. You say maps to a particular data center. What if my I have a client hitting that particular table from, say, the East Coast, but the data center is being mapped to somewhere in Europe. Am I losing the ability to go to a closer data center if I have to tie the authority to the data center, or am I just confused here?
No, from talking with David Robinson, after this gets out of beta, the developers will have the ability to choose to assign their authorities to what data center. And I'm looking at further, you know how you can geolocate an IP address. So if you know that this browser is coming from Europe, then in code you could go and programmatically go to your data center that's closest to that.
Okay.
Oh, that's very cool. Have you seen any samples written around that yet?
No. It's just one of the things I'm thinking about, and I kind of chat with him about it.
Yeah, that's just crying out to be a sample on CodePlex.
Right.
Hint, hint.
Yeah, I got you.
Hey, we have a question in the queue here from Suresh. What is a property bag? How can one store different structure every time he or she saves? So this is a typical great question that we get from developers trying to grok the difference between the new kind of storage and you know, typical relational data storage. So can you be a little bit more specific? Like how does it actually happen? Maybe you want to get into the demo a little bit, or?
Well, I don't have that as a demo, but
okay.
Back to updating, you can't do partial updates on your entity. So you have to do a full, because when you do an update, it gets replaced in the container. So you have to pull the entire entity down, and then if you made a change to, you know, like podcast.name, then you would have to change that and then send everything back, keeping the original values that you wanted to keep.
Oh, that's the price you pay.
Yes.
I see. Okay. Okay, great. Okay, hey, you got to show some code. Come on.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay, so.
Developer show.
All right, so what I did here is I created this little website that, so we can go over creating the authorities.
Oh, great. Okay, good.
Okay. I want to. First off, right now in the CTP, once you create an authority, you're stuck with it. I mean, you can create as many as you want to in your account. I think you're limited like 500. But once you create one, you can't delete it. And I have confirmed that when, you know, later on you will be able to manage your authorities. So for right now.
Oh, okay. Hold on. So when you get your account, you get a username and a password and a project name, but you don't get an authority.
Right. You have to go and you have to create your own authorities.
So these are like fake authorities, basically, just for testing purposes?
No, you could use them.
Okay. Well, how do you know where they're geolocated?
You don't yet.
Okay. So.
Well, I mean, this is nowhere near ready for production.
No. I understand. But just from, so in order to connect to the cloud, though, you need an authority. So when you're creating an authority name, which I assume you're doing programmatically here,
mm-hmm.
where are you? You just don't know where you're connecting to. You're connecting to just some random.
Yeah, it's in the cloud, right? Somewhere in the cloud.
Okay, but the point I want to make, and I'm actually doing this on purpose because, again, probably my own ignorance, I struggled with it. I thought that you would be given an authority when you got an account, that, you know, we would be managing it, in other words.
Mm-hmm.
But I was quite surprised to find out that you have to create an authority. So I think that's a really, really important point for developers to understand. You have to create an authority, which is basically an alias to some X location in the cloud. And mm-hmm. James is going to show you how to do that here in just a minute.
So basically what I can do, I can just type in the name of my, the authority that I want, and I'll just do three, and I'll just say create the authority. So there it is. Okay, yeah, big deal. That's my authority is done. But if I go over here, I on the forums, there's this guy named Mike Edmondson, and he has built this really cool little website that you log in with your credentials, and then you can go and you can see all the your authorities and containers and everything. So there is the anonymous types -03 authority that I just created. Make sense?
So what is, can you show us the code behind it? What is going on under the hood when you click that create authority button?
Yep. So what I do here is under create authority, I have to get my user credentials. And then in the hands-on labs, they assume that you're only going to use one authority. So in your credentials, you have an authority, a username, and then a password that's further down. This is my, so nobody can figure out my password. It's like got 400 carriage returns.
Okay, where do you want to be? Because I don't think you're showing us where you want to be. Which, what are you trying to show us?
Okay, so in my web config or your app config.
Okay, in web config, okay.
Okay. In the app settings, I have a key called authority.
Ah, okay, there it is.
And a key called username.
Uh-huh.
And then password is way down below the folder.
Oh, got it.
Okay.
Hey, one quick question. Any, in the particular project, any DLLs, any references that you need to set beforehand?
No.
So if we look at your bin directory, there's just nothing more there.
Yeah, there's nothing there. I mean, there's some class files for, you know, creating your configuration, doing the rest stuff, getting some constants, but there's nothing else that you need.
Okay.
Other than, you know, if you're just building a basic website and you have other, you know, third-party tools or things like that.
No, oh, yeah, sure.
Because you're using SOAP or REST, which are standard protocols.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay,
correct.
Got it.
Okay. And so, you know, where was I? Oh, back on the hands-on labs, they assume that you already have an authority.
Mm-hmm.
So, but here I wanted to show a demo of creating the authority, so this is how I did it. So then I go back to this one class for the REST methods, which is create an authority. You create some XML, and you pass it in, and the system takes care of it. Do you want to step through it so we can see what the XML looks like?
Sure.
Yeah, why don't you?
Okay.
So just to be clear on this, you can create an authority through these samples while he's stepping through this method that's provided, or you can go out to the website utility where you not only can view your existing authorities, but you can also create authorities if you don't want to bother with this. I just thought it was not really clear in the documentation, and again, maybe it's just my own being new with it. But I spun cycles on it, and I thought, I want to make sure that we explain this clearly to people.
There are some other tools that come on the SDS SDK.
Mm-hmm.
There's a command line tool that you can use that's similar to that website that I just showed you.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a Windows application that's very similar as well.
Yeah, I did put those on my blog, too. I thought were kind of neat.
So if we look at see what this XML is that we're passing through, that's the ID. We're just telling it to create this.
And then increment it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, the increment is, that's what I did.
Right, I know. Yeah, then you are incrementing, got it. Okay.
Right.
And it's just pointing to a random cloud location.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
At the moment.
Okay.
And so then we go through. Now, if you try to create an authority that is already there, you will get an error. So you have to do some error handling on that as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, let me jump back over to the blog entry about the authorities. So the basic service URI is data.database.windows.net/v1. But now, since we've created an authority, and I haven't updated this, the code to this, is, but I created one called during launch -01. So now that's how I get to that authority.
That's your URI, basically.
Yes.
Okay.
So if we go back here, and now let's create a container.
Now, one thing, too, that I think is important for developers to know is that unlike Azure storage, SQL storage has no local test component. So you have to create all the stuff up in the cloud before you can start trying to send data or update data. You cannot test it locally.
Correct.
And it's a very big difference from working with Azure storage because it has a full-on local client.
That's a very, very good point.
Yeah, I'm seeing from one of our regular listeners that authorities have to be lowercase. Yeah, there's definite rules around authority creation. They have to be all lowercase, and they can contain only certain, I think it's letters, numbers, and dash. I looked it up on MSDN.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll get that link up there as well. So thanks for sharing that. It's very specific at this point. So good. Okay, so you have to create the authority, you have to create the container, okay,
mm-hmm.
Then.
So now, just a little side note, I actually am building a website called Anonymous Types, and it's going to be a podcasting website, and I'm presenting at Code Camp next weekend,
mm-hmm.
And we're going to be fleshing, I'm going to be using SQL Data Services to actually run the website. So with that little side note.
How fun.
So I'm going to create a podcast.
And for those who are listening, this is a SoCal Code Camp at the University of California at Fullerton. Okay, go ahead.
So now I'm going to create a container, and I'll call it 03-04. Okay. And so there that is, and I can go back over here, and we can refresh. Oops, I need to go back. So I can take Anonymous Types 3. Whoops, where did I put it?
I'm not sure which. Were you, Danny, were you watching which authority he put
there
it in?
There we go.
No, actually, I didn't think he put it on any authority.
Well, he did.
I did. And that code, it uses, what that does is that code then, it goes back and it uses this authority here.
Gotcha.
Not the one I just created. So you can see now here's the authority, the container that I just built. You can see the raw response here, just XML.
Actually, we can't. You need to,
there
we go. Okay. Yep, got it.
So now, we've created the authority, we've created the container. And let me go back here. So if we can see here, this container now would be anonymous types -02.data.database.windows.net/v1/podcast03-04.
Okay, just building the URI, got it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay. And the last one is that we're going to put an entity in here, which is going to be the actual podcast. Any metadata about the podcast and the file itself. There's one thing that you can do with SQL Data Services is you can upload blobs.
Yes. Uh-huh. Okay, and that goes back to the earlier question about the property bag. You can put property, you can upload properties that are associated to blobs.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
So now we'll make an entity name. I'll just do this. Geek Speak Podcast. And I want to publish it on February 5th. I'm going to choose a file. And then I'll upload it.
and then you cross your fingers. No.
Well, I practiced and practiced.
So,
although I probably could have used a smaller file to upload. But
yeah, that's all right. Bye-bye, go into the cloud.
There we go.
And there are limits, and which are documented on MSDN for during the beta, the CTP phase of how big. I think it's 100 megabytes per blob.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure those will be adjustable as we move into production.
So now if we go back over here and check, and we do a refresh. Okay, so now we can see our entity there. And there's the information.
I don't want to see the row response and all that good stuff.
I'm sorry?
Show us the XML. Yeah. We're programmers.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to try it. Last when I was practicing, yeah, what it's doing is it's sucking this guy's bandwidth to show that. So
That's right.
Right. So, but trust me, that's
what it does. You have to convert that object.
We know what to wait for it, huh?
I'm sorry, what was that?
So it has to convert that object into a byte array.
Yes.
To see it. Yeah.
Yeah. But if we go back and look at this raw response, you can see it there. So we have, So we have the ID that we gave it. That's the entity ID that you pass in.
Uh-huh.
It automatically assigns a version number when you do something to it, and then the content type. We see that. So what, a 23 megabyte file?
Now that you have that one entity in there, if I were to go in and add another entity, do I have to follow that particular structure?
No.
Of ID, version, content, or can I create my own blob now, you know, as a totally different entity?
Well, you need to assign an ID to it, and the system automatically assigns the version.
Gotcha.
But you could add some other data to that entity.
No, but what I mean is, does it have to follow the same type, or can I create my own entity, say to store instead of podcast information, maybe I don't know, movie information?
Oh, sure.
So we'll have a different structure than the I might want to show actors and they released and.
Yeah, and that's all in what we were talking about earlier, the property bag.
Gotcha.
So really the question is, when do you create separate entities? What's the reason for creating a separate entity?
Well, think of an entity as a record.
Okay.
So the question is, when do you create a different container, I guess?
Yeah, that's what I was going with it.
Good question. I hadn't thought about that so far.
Okay, that's fair enough.
We're still in CTP.
Yeah, no, we're all going through. Now, just again, to put a little spin on this, isn't security set currently at the level of the container? It's not the entity, is it? It's container, isn't it?
I think it's set at the authority level because you need to pass in this information order to get there.
Okay, so this is something we need to do a little bit more research on.
Right.
I think it's container or authority. We'll figure it out. If it were container, then that would be a reason to make a separate container.
Yes.
Different security.
Yes.
So I think if it's authority right now, then the intent is to move it to container. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I'm making a note to research that even more.
Okay. Cool. All right. So you saw we saw the mechanics of it. It looks like you're going into the code, which would be great because we'd love to see the code on how that happened.
Sure. Let me get out of the debug mode here.
So this was a sample that came with the CTP samples.
Kind of, sort of.
And then you changed it a bit to be able to use it for something real world.
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
So, yeah, this is the method here that creates the entity that uploads the information. So I have the file upload, and I do all that kind of stuff, and then I create an XML object, which has all the data that I need, and then I just insert that over here. So if we go to Insert Podcast. I have a, I'm passing in my configuration settings.
I see it, yeah.
Here.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I'm formatting the URI with the name of the authority, which would be anonymous type,
mm-hmm.
and then the name of the container, which is set here, which I set here. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then we go down here. And this is where the actual blob gets uploaded with FileStream. And it's pretty straightforward. It's just chunking it through and sending it up.
So how long did it take you to modify the sample to get this in working condition? Was this a one-day thing? Was this a week? I mean, how long did it take you? Was this a...
Oh, I don't know. It was maybe a couple of hours.
Okay. Okay. That's what I was thinking. And I think mm-hmm. that that's important for the developers listening to understand that we're, even though the data storage is different, the core technologies are still things that you're going to use. I think
mm-hmm.
that's real important so that you don't completely lose all productivity.
Exactly. And in fact, I mean, here is, I'm right there on the SQL Data Services Developer Center. There's, you know, creating a blob NID using REST. There's a really great article. And I worked through that, and that was pretty much how I modified it. So there's
hey,
a lot
of good
content.
Hey, we have a question here on the queue.
Okay.
If entities belong to containers, which belong to authorities, which is effectively assigned to a single data center, how is it that my data is mirror? And I think we kind of went over that earlier.
I think that's more along the internal workings of how this SDS people have set that up and how it gets mirrored.
Yeah, I guess the side question to that is you assign an authority to a data center, and that kind of even I'm having issues trying to wrap that around. How is it then that authority then can be passed from server to server.
Well, actually,
I think it's a little too early to kind of talk about that. I'm sure they're working on it.
Well, there is some information available in preparing for my Azure talk coming up in February. I have gotten some information from the team, so I'll share it out. The way that I understand it is that there is multiple types of replication, and I've actually worked with SQL replication professionally before I joined Microsoft pretty extensively, so I'm pretty comfortable talking about how SQL replication works. It's a variant, of course, because this is not SQL Server itself in the cloud. It is a core implementation of SQL Server services, but not pure SQL Server. So from a high level, there is a replication with no latency within a particular data center, and then there is replication with latency to one or more remote data centers. And of course, obviously with latency, you have the potential for data loss. So without getting too much into the nits, that is the sort of high level overview of it, that there's multiple types of replication with multiple types of latency. And I don't know if that makes sense to the person asking the question. You can ask it again if it's not making sense. But that's really how it works, because you obviously can't have instantaneous replication across different geolocated centers. However, and again, I'm not going to take the whole time to talk about SQL replication. There have been some pretty amazing advances in replication from coming up from SQL 7 all the way to 2008, so that there can be very, very, very little latency. I mean, we're talking like a second. Or you know, a couple of seconds of latency. So hopefully that's answering this person's question.
Well, so from what I understand, well, this is SQL Data Services. It's not SQL and SQL Server in the cloud.
Exactly.
The data centers are running SQL Server.
They're running a version of it.
Yes.
They're running a version of it. So good question though. If we haven't answered it specifically enough. the person who asked it can feel free to ask a detailed question about it. Okay, good. So, James, where were you showing us now?
Well, we're kind of through with my demo. I was just going, we were talking about how long did it take to do it.
Okay.
And I was showing the example, you know, the example that I had found and how to build it.
Oh, yeah. Okay, and working with it. Okay, so we should probably talk about, so you've shown blob storage. So let's talk about the types of storage and maybe contrast them with Azure data storage, because that might be useful from the people listening. So Azure data storage uses three types of storage. It uses a blob, a table, or a queue. And the table there is also a schemaless table, but it doesn't use entities. It uses something called a table. And you can have a local copy of it on a local SQL Server instance, which can be SQL Server Express, and test it and look at it locally. And then you can also, of course, obviously put it to the cloud. Now, compare that with SQL Data Services. You have blob, and what else?
Blobs, strings, I mean, anything that you want to send up there. And you can also do queries through REST.
Oh, yeah, we probably should talk about queries, because SQL Data Services queries are not T-SQL queries.
Correct.
So do you have that in the code anywhere? Do you have anything showing, or we can just talk about it if you don't have it in the code?
No, I don't.
Okay.
But right here on this example,
okay,
back in the Bremer, it's got some really good information on how to query.
Okay, basically it's link.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's you know, that's a fundamental difference between other types of storage and SQL Data Services, is that link is actually required to query it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've been putting off learning link and you're now jumping to the cloud, it's going to be time.
I'm trying to find one of the examples.
A good point there too, Alain, is that if people want to get a handle on how to query this data, and they don't want to bother right now just looking at Azure per se or SQL Data Service, they can use this with ADL.NET data services, because it's the same querying mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't need a cloud. You can do it locally if you want to get your head around how to query this data. It works very similarly.
One of the other things I thought was really interesting when researching SQL services is we made several announcements about intended functionality. Now, this is stuff that's not even available in CTP yet, but there are some, I call them stealth releases. For example, one of the stealth releases is around an area that I'm particularly interested in, which is data mining. So there is actually a website that you can go to, and you can see an implementation of data mining in the cloud, and you can actually upload a CSV file and apply data mining. It's the interface is kind of like the Excel data mining ribbon, so you can get kind of an idea of where we're going with it. I see also a related question in the queue, which talks about services that we have announced that we intend to add. And the question is, can you synchronize your local system with the cloud or vice versa? And you can use the method that Danny just described. But we've also announced that we intend to take SQL Server sync services and to make that available as a service, as part of SQL services. The services that we've announced are reporting services, data mining, sync services, and I believe there's one more. This is all on the Azure site.
.NET services is also.
Right, but I'm talking about future. This is in a group called SQL Server Services Futures.
Gotcha.
So it's specific to SQL Server. Yeah, I mean, we have .NET services, which is the STS or the security token service in the sky, and some other things, workflow in the sky, but these are specific to SQL. And to me, I think it's important for our developers to know about where we're looking in the future, because when you look at what we have available today, it's really only just a really base foundation of what we intend to offer in terms of SQL services in the cloud. James, what are you, when you're talking to developers about this technology, because you are so early on, what kind of questions are you typically getting from them?
Pretty much a lot of the same questions that are coming in right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Anything that we haven't covered? One thing that I haven't seen much in this Geek Speak that we've had in the past was security and how security works.
I was just going to say, you know, security.
Why don't we talk a little bit about that?
Okay. Well, the security pretty much is handled here in your, you know, your authority and your, the username and the password.
So it's really a very high level security at this point.
Right. I don't think it's, I'm sure that they're going to make it very granular in the future.
Right.
But for right now, you know, the CTP, I mean, this is what we have.
Yeah.
I think you just have to trust that they will, they're already working on it and that there will be a solution.
Yeah, so I think it's really very important that everybody who's listening understands that this is not what we intend to be the final security model.
Exactly, yeah, plain text.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why, and just scroll your web config way down so no one can see the password.
Yeah, security by obscurity.
Right.
Now you've been working with this technology since PDC, which is a few months. And one of the things we like to do on GeekSpeak is we like to share our pain so that others can avoid it, right? You know, the practical tips. So are there any things that we haven't covered so far that you kind of learned the hard way that maybe it took a while to sort of, you know, make sense that you wished you had known before you got into this and now you're saying, you know, I get this now, but boy, it took a while.
No, really, honestly, the hardest part is remembering where to go for what information. I've set up, you know, on my favorites.live.com site, I have all the links that I find, and how to, and which ones go to where. But I think if you go to azure.com and then follow those links there, that's where the information is that you need.
Well, it's like Danny said, because we are evolving these technologies so rapidly, there is a lot of information in a lot of different places, and it does get updated, you know, almost monthly.
Right.
So it's hard to stay on top. One of the things I know you and I have talked about is this is an area of focus for you, and you're trying to really develop an expertise working directly with the product team. So hopefully people who are listening will use your blog as a resource. www.duringlunch.com because it clearly can be a time saver if you do have a blog that aggregates all this disparate information that's coming out.
And I was also going to say, if anybody wants to send me an email directly, that's fine too. I'll try and help them out in getting the information they need.
Terrific, terrific. Danny, you've been working with this technology as I have, you know, since PDC. Any other lessons learned that you'd like to share with the group?
To me, the biggest thing to get my was basically understanding that this was not SQL Server, hosted SQL Server. That there was a new paradigm, I guess, or developing model around it. Just the name alone kind of makes you think that this is SQL. Server, and it is way, you know, in the back. But once you get your hands, you know, get an understanding that this is not SQL, I think a lot of it just starts making more sense.
So it's almost like you have to unlearn.
Yeah, and the other thing too is, you know, again, if this follows a lot of the same techniques that ADO.NET Data Service follows, so
exactly,
you can. You know, start there if you want to do something that is released today. Then you can start there, and then you'll be able to easily migrate to the cloud once this is available.
Great. Well, terrific. Well, you know, again, we're getting back to the end of the hour. These hours go by so fast, and hopefully, we provided you with some good information. Oops, I'm going to switch back to the right deck here. And we do have resources. Let me find them here. There we go. This is Azure Month on GeekSpeak. All month long, we've got Azure shows, and they're always recorded. So we had Aaron Sconard on a couple weeks ago. We had Adnan Masood on last week on Azure Table and Blob and QStorage. And then we have another Azure guest coming out next week. We're working on GeekSpeak shows for the next couple of months. We're going to have a Languages Month, and we're going to have a Post-Mix Month. We've got a lot of cool things coming up. We have Danny's blog listed here. We have my blog listed here, James's blog as well. And we're going to be presenting live events around Azure starting in February throughout the United States. I know I've got one at in February 24th in Anaheim and February 26th in San Diego, and the registration will be open for that shortly. So I'd really like to thank Danny for co-hosting.
Thank you.
Fun. And I'm going to and thank James for coming on. Thank you very much.
Oh, it was great. I had fun.
And turn it back over to our producer to do the wrap-up. And if you have any other questions, just type them away in the queue.
All right. Thanks, Lynn. If you have any last-minute questions for our presenters, go ahead and submit those now by using the Q&A pane. And we'll be getting to those in just a minute. I would like to remind everyone that you may print a PDF of the slides by clicking Control-P. And you can either print or save those slides locally for your convenience. Right now, you should be seeing a survey in the slide area. If you could take a moment to fill it out before you log off, we do appreciate any feedback you do leave for us. All you need to do is follow the links provided to complete the evaluation. With that, I'm going to hand the floor back over to Liz.
Great. Thank you very much. And again, if you have any other questions, type them in the queue. Otherwise, thanks for listening, and we'll hope that you listen again in future weeks.
All right. With that, I'd like to extend a special thanks to James Johnson, Lynn Langan, and Danny Diaz for today's presentation. Thank you for joining us today. You may now disconnect from the audio portion of today's conference.